Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's 9:30. You know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. With us here on the line is Lieutenant Jim Perez, and this is our Crime on the Mind segment that we do every Monday. Lieutenant, it's good to have you here. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
We're doing fine today. Let's talk a little bit about these mass shootings that have been happening recently. The most recent one, a horrible shooting in Virginia. But the thing that's weird about this is that this guy, he resigned his position before he came up and shot up the place, and there was no reason for him to even think that he was going to be fired in any way. I mean, everything seemed to be pretty cool in his life. What makes it take a turn like that?
Here's the thing, that work dynamics, just like home dynamics, can be very convoluted and very complex. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of emotion at work, especially in today's day, just as there is at home. And so whether you have an incident that happens at home in domestic violence, or you have an incident at work, it really shares the same characteristics. There's a lot of anger. Maybe things didn't go their way. Maybe they didn't get what they thought they should get. Sometimes agitation from one employee to another, or from a supervisor to an employee. Here's the reality. Active shooter is a very serious event. The FBI has already listed that in 2016 there were 20 incidences of active shooter, and in 2017 there were 30 incidences. That's 50 incidences of active shooter. I mean, we're talking some serious damage and death and carnage that have taken place. Out of those 50 incidents, there's been 943 casualties, including, you know, those that were hurt, wounded, 722 that were wounded, 221 that were killed. And 13 law enforcement officers were killed during that time. This is just in 2 years. So the bottom line here is that every employee of every place, it doesn't matter where you work, whether it's a public sector or private sector, every employee needs to have training in active shooter, how to recognize it, how to avoid it, ways to stay safe. There are many things that that can be done to actually prevent an active shooter situation.
And we have Lieutenant Jim Perez on the line with us, our crime prevention expert, every Monday morning. Jim, I guess what I'm curious about, especially in this situation, or really I think in most of the ones we've seen, commonly we hear people say, but I didn't see this coming. This person didn't seem violent. We caught no signs of it. And I think a lot of the times that's why people are a little hesitant to do active shooter training. Do you think there's something that can be done to change our mindset? And, you know, because I could say I look at my whole workplace and I don't see anybody who seems violent or seems like they would do that. But I think sometimes that's what sets that precedent of why this then happens. Do you agree? And if that's the case, how do we fix that before we even talk about trying to do active shooter training? How do we change people's mindset? Because that's what we're seeing even in this situation with the Virginia shooting.
No, I agree completely. And here's the thing. People are, for one reason or another, people are afraid to engage in active shooter training. But I'll tell you the truth. Active shooter training can and will save your life, not only at work, but anywhere that you go, whether you're on vacation, whether you're at the mall. And it starts by understanding what exactly it is and how someone gets triggered by that. But more importantly, it's the behavior indicators. There are specific tips and strategies that can be given to every single employee to understand the violent indicators that are out there that can prevent the violence from taking place. So by training someone appropriately, I conduct active shooter training all across the country, and I will tell you that every single time at the end of the training, people have said that, number one, they've never realized what a wealth of information they've learned. But here's the thing. I change people, and any active shooter trainer does this, but they change people by changing the radio dial in their mind that actually allows them to tune into the right station to be able to pick up violent indicators all the way around them before it becomes a physical disruption or a physical attack. And so there are many training programs out there in which people can engage with. And let me tell you, for companies and corporations that haven't done this yet, they're facing a massive liability issue. Because imagine if an incident were to happen at your company and all of a sudden you have to go to court for whatever reason. Forget about all the emotional damage and everything else that's done. But now you have to go to court, and now you're gonna show that you have no training whatsoever in your employees to be able to defend or at least try to prevent this incident from happening. But there's no doubt in my mind, there are programs out there that are very powerful that can change people's lives for the better and actually give them an insight into how to be able to detect violent indicators before they become physical. And the insider threat in a company is very real. You saw that in the Virginia incident. This is an insider threat. It wasn't someone from the outside, a terrorist or anyone like that, wanting to harm the company. This is from your very own employees. So it is high time that everyone start to listen, pay attention, and engage in some type of training to help their employees have a safe environment every single day when they go to work.
But Jim, let's take the active training out of the equation. Sure. You're going to work every day. Is there signs? Is there something that we should be recognizing? Or is this just something that one day a switch is turned on and they decide to come in and start blasting? I mean, are there things that we should look for?
Yeah, psychologically, there is no such thing as a switch going off. It's usually unresolved personal problems that have gone on for a long time. And what ends up happening is at work, you get those employees that people segregate to the side. They sort of don't want them. They don't want to deal with them either because, you know, they don't get along with them or they don't like the way they are or whatever. It's that person who, when they're segregated, the quiet person that doesn't know how to resolve issues, doesn't turn to EAP, does not turn to friends or families for help. This is the individual that an employee must report to supervision so that supervision or human resource can actually get out there and start giving them resources or help. But that is the key, that oftentimes people don't just snap. It's usually an issue that takes place that no one wants to talk about, that no one wants to address, and every time they hide away from it, it makes it worse and worse. It's almost like a pot of water that's covered, you know? After a while, the top's going to boil over. It's the same thing with this particular individual. This is an individual that doesn't respond well to criticism, that doesn't like to follow rules, and everyone knows who this employee is. Everyone knows in their own place. The problem is that we are, as a culture, an American culture especially, we are taught not to follow our sixth sense, not to kind of like, you know, that gift of fear that we have, that sixth sense. We're told, don't talk about it because it's embarrassing or you don't want to offend anybody or anything. And I say the opposite. I say everything should be spoken about. And if someone has an issue, it needs to be reported to supervision so that supervisors can handle it to prevent the problem from starting or the explosion from taking place.
We are back on right now with Lieutenant Jim Perez, who's with the Fairfield Police Department. He's our crime prevention expert every Monday morning at 9:30 to talk crime on the mind. And we were just talking about mass shootings and what recently happened in Virginia. Jim, you talked about how you think active shooter training should be done for companies and corporations, things like that. Would you say the same should be done for schools? Because we've heard from President Trump recently, I think only months ago, that he talked about, you know, we should arm teachers, we should have active shooter training done in schools and things like that. Do you feel the same way about schools? I mean, should teachers and even like children go through active shooter training?
Here's the thing. I do say that, yes, teachers and even students should go through some form. Students to a much lesser degree, but more so staff, but they should all go through an active shooter training class because think about it. Ultimately, you're responsible for your own life because when everything falls apart, and even teachers that have students, you know, that they have care over those students, when an emergency happens, some of those students can slip away. So it's up to the student to recognize something wrong and recognize the options that they have to actually keep safe. For them to be able to protect themselves. But I will tell you this, with respect to schools, I think that, you know, a good solution would be to have expert personnel in guns, such as police officers or retired police officers, to actually work in those schools. I'm not so certain about just every single everyday person just having guns in the schools because weapons are an extremely important and dangerous instrument. You know, because you have trajectories and all these different things that can happen, over penetration where other innocent people can get shot. So there's a whole expertise there. But I will tell you this, I think that everyone, everyone that can hear me, everyone should have some type of very basic active shooter training, which really prepares them, because you know what? It doesn't have to be at work only. It doesn't have to be at school only. It can be when you're on vacation, when you're walking a dog, when you're at the mall, when you're in a mass gathering. An active shooter event can happen in any of these places. So anyone who has training in that area can help minimize risk. And that's what we're talking about today.
If a company or a school, if they don't already have the training, is there a way that people can find either clinics or something like that where they can do active shooter training?
Yeah, there are many companies and agencies that offer active shooter training. And, you just have to look on the internet. But there are places that can actually offer it. I've been training it for the last 10 years. And there are other people like me that have been teaching it as well. And so, any active shooter training is better than no training at all. And I'm telling you, it helps. Not only does it help save your employees' lives, but it brings comfort to their families. And when you bring comfort to the employees' families, guess what? You have a more productive employee. And then number two, it also reduces liability. So God forbid, if something were to happen in the company setting, you could honestly say that you did everything within your power to arm your employees with the proper information. There's no need to have fear. Really, there isn't. In any corporation or any company, fear is the enemy. Really, what you should do is open up, have an open mind, and go out there and actually have them trained in it, and at least give them the opportunity to help themselves in their own little work environment, which can very much be very helpful.
Lieutenant Jim Perez, we just had one more question before we let you go this morning. Kind of switching gears really quickly. Obviously, the story that's on a lot of people's minds in the last week or so has to be the disappearance of this new Canaan mother. Our hearts obviously go out to her five children. This morning, you and I had an interesting conversation. It just feels like with all the searching going on, now having her estranged husband and his girlfriend now facing charges this morning in court, it feels like police are just very tight-lipped about the whole thing. From your expertise, because I know this isn't your department, obviously, running or in charge of this, but why do police do that? Why aren't we hearing more about this? I have to imagine in almost 2 weeks' time since she's been missing, there's more we just don't know about. Is there a reason that we don't know about it, that they're kind of holding this together and not sharing it with the public?
Yeah, police always look for cooperation from the public, and I've often said this, that police cannot work autonomously by themselves in solving crimes. It's usually the result of a partnership with either the community or a specific person that gives information that helps us. But here's the reason, here's what happens. When we need help in certain areas, we reach out to the community and we ask for that help, whether it be by placing a picture of someone or giving out information. But sometimes we have to stay tight-lipped. And it's primarily done because oftentimes there are at least two people who definitely know what happened. And one of them sometimes does and sometimes doesn't. And that's the victim and the offender or the suspect. And so any information that we as law enforcement receive, we have to be very careful with the dissemination of that information, because oftentimes, it's just the other person that has intimate knowledge of the incident. And that gives us kind of like a heads up. So if we were to release that information, then what happens is we're sort of, not only are we shirking our responsibility, but we're really doing a disservice to the family of the victim. And we have a responsibility as police to really bring closure to a devastating incident. And I think a lot of that has to do with being careful and not overstepping or not speaking when we shouldn't be speaking about a particular case. And believe it or not, it actually helps in the end, because it ties the person to it more solidly.
Our top story this morning, two people are expected to face a judge at Norwalk Court today in connection to the disappearance of a new Canaan mother. 50-year-old Jennifer Dulos has been reported missing since May 24th. She was last seen dropping off her kids at school. Her car found shortly after that day at Waveney Park, but no signs of her since then. Her estranged husband, Fotis Dulos, and his girlfriend, Michelle Traconis, are accused of tampering with evidence and are now being held on $500,000 each. Court documents revealed that Jennifer and Fotis have been in a custody battle over their five children for 2 years, and they've already filed for divorce. We are told search efforts will continue at large this morning.
This is a story that shaking a lot of people to their very core. A vigil was held in New Canaan last night for that missing mom. The vigil took place inside of Mark's Episcopal Church in New Canaan. Now, the community hit very hard by the disappearance of Jennifer Doulos on Saturday night. Her estranged husband and his girlfriend had been arrested for tampering with evidence and hindering the prosecution. Another vigil was scheduled for later in the night in Hartford. Now, the thing about this is awful, no matter where it's happening. But in a bedroom community like New Canaan, where nothing ever happens, it has really shaken everybody up a little bit. And I could never, ever, ever, ever understand what goes through someone's head. I mean, allegedly, they don't know what's going on. Allegedly, they have evidence that him and his girlfriend, they know a little bit more about what's going on than what they're letting on. But I could never understand. You want out of the marriage? That's fine. But like murder? There's five children that are involved here now. Five children that are going to, that have already lost their mother.
Right.
And if this all holds true, they're going to lose their father as well. Not that that's any great loss, because something tells me he's not too tightly wrapped to begin with.
Yeah, and I was reading more reports on this, Tony, because, of course, I was on vacation last week, but this was, of course, I was kind of keeping track of everything, and there were tweets, there were all kinds of social media blurbs about this, and I was trying to keep in tabs on this, because I knew this would kind of go on, and it would still be our top stories this week. And when I was reading, apparently Jennifer's parents as well, who live very close by, they're in New York, but they're not too far from her New Canaan home. They, I believe, have custody of the children right now, but they too have I believe they are suing him for borrowing money or something of that nature. They also have a lawsuit out on Fotis Doulos because he had borrowed money for some of his estate properties and has never paid them back. And they were already kind of against him for that as well. There have been obviously a lot of issues. There's a quote from Jennifer in the past saying that she thought her husband would get violent because of his how he likes weapons and things like that. So there are definitely a lot of red flags. Certainly just working in news for a long time, prosecutors have always said whenever somebody goes missing or something severe like this happens, your first line of defense is go to the spouse and go to the family and see if there are any ties that need to be locked up there, kind of. And it sounds like this is not really a surprise that he would be one of the first suspects in this case, or his girlfriend. But the fact that they're both being held on $500,000, it sounds like there's got to be more behind the story than just tampering with evidence, as far as I'm concerned. That's a lot of money to hold two people for $500,000 each if you're just tampering with evidence. And what more do they know? And it's definitely a very unsettling situation.
I say this, where there's smoke, there's fire, Melissa. So we'll see how it all goes. It's just very, very, very upsetting. Mm-hmm. It really, really is. So we'll see. And you know something? A young woman, I mean, she was only 50 years old. Beautiful. She's got five kids.
That's what kills me. My heart breaks for the children. I always am heartbroken over marriages that fail. It's a horrible situation, and it's awful. But those children, when I was reading it, they're only like 8 to 13 years old. They're still little. They're still going through growing up. I thought when the reports first came out, I thought, okay, she's 50. Maybe her kids are at least older. Not that that makes it better, but they're still babies as far as I'm concerned. They've barely reached puberty. Like, these are still children. And, oh, my heart is broken for them. I'm praying so hard for that family. And I don't know. It's obviously not looking great, Tony, but I'm certainly praying at least for some closure, to say the least, some closure.
Now, I hope Melissa doesn't mind, but she had an experience last night that it does happen to people. I mean, these aren't things that we just kind of make up as we go along. It's very important that you lock your doors. It's very important that before you go to bed, you make sure the windows, everything is taken care of before you go to bed. And never, never, ever open up the door to a stranger. You never, ever do that. And Melissa, you don't have to tell the story if you don't want to. But I thought that it was very relevant to some of the things that we talk about here every single day.
I agree. And it was something I thought of Lieutenant Perez, Jimmy Perez, who we have on every Monday, and we'll talk to him. I was thinking of bringing this up during the segment today really quickly because he comes on every Monday at 9:30. And I think it was 2 weeks ago, Tony, we talked about people coming to your door and making your house not feel so like a target for people. And last night, we had somebody ring our doorbell at 9:30. We always put the baby down around 8. I go to bed right after because I have to get up for work. And all of a sudden, our dog is going crazy, and I can't understand why Trusty's getting so upset. And then I hear the doorbell ring twice, and I immediately run to the door. Of course, my husband runs to go make sure the baby's okay and is holding on to the dog. And I run to the door, and I turn the light on, and there's just this man standing there. And I'm hesitant to open the door because I remember Lieutenant Perez had said, don't ever, if you don't know anybody that's coming or you didn't plan for somebody to be there, don't open the door. So I, like a lunatic, I'm screaming through the door at this man. And this poor man is a pizza delivery man. He went to the wrong house, but I'm screaming, who are you? I didn't ask for a pizza. And the man's like, I'm really sorry. I was told to come to this house. And he had to go back into his car and sat in our driveway for 15 minutes to try to figure out where he went wrong. But I couldn't sleep last night, Tony. I already texted my husband this morning at 3:00 and I said, I came to work a half hour early. Tony's laughing at me. I couldn't sleep last night. I need you to call our alarm people and we need to set up those cameras in the front of the house. It may sound really extra, but seriously, especially with what's going on in New Canaan, I'm just a little on edge about it. And I do think it's something to bring up. I think it's just so relevant because we always talk about, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? It did happen. And it's scary.
Well, it's very, very unsettling. Now this kid had no ulterior motives. He made a mistake. It's as simple as that. But nonetheless, 9:30 at night, especially when you're in bed. Your husband was asleep too?
Yeah, we were both asleep.
Yeah, you see, everything's quiet, everything's
our serene. Lights were off, the baby's sleeping, the dog is settled downstairs. Yeah. Like it's like when your alarm does go off and you're all of a sudden like, what's going on? Is there an intruder? You just kind of are totally alarmed, and that's exactly what it was. We were just unsettled the rest of the night.
Well, you know, that's my wife's thing. You see, I automatically... That's the way I am. I automatically go to open up the door. That's
what I almost did. I went to open the door, and thank God Derek's like, don't open the door. What are you doing?
Right.
Like, we don't know who's coming to the house. And, of course, my immediate reaction is, well, that's how we grew up. Thanks for coming. What can I make you? Would you like some leftover pasta?
Well, that's what, you know, like I say, I go for the door with my wife yelling behind me, don't be a moron. Don't be a moron.
Right.
You know, it's just the way that it goes now in this day and age. And like I said, I mean, that was innocent enough. The dude made a mistake and he went away. But nonetheless, you don't know that. You don't know what the motive is. You don't know that he's delivering pizza. And when you say to him, who is it? What are you doing? Oh, I'm delivering pizza. That's the oldest thing in the book.
Right,
for you
I know.
To open up the door.
I know, exactly. Well, and I did feel, I mean, of course, right away I felt badly because he, you know, of course was apologetic. He went back to his car. We saw on the car the pizza restaurant he had come from. So it seemed very legitimate, but I was just so freaked out the rest of the night. I thought, well, what if I did open the door? What if he had something in the pizza bag? What if I looked away at one point? Or what if, you know, there's just all these scenarios, and immediately you think, well, I have a son, and I have a husband, and I have a family, and I just can't imagine making a quick second decision that would have just destroyed, it could have destroyed myself or my family or whatever, and you just start to, your mind just runs wild, and that's how it's been since 9:30 last night, and I'm waiting for the alarm company to open up this morning at 8:00 so I can call them.
All right, no harm, no foul, everybody's okay, but just a warning, it can happen at any time of the day, just be careful at all times. Some interesting things that happened on this date in history many years ago, actually 219 years ago in 1800, President John Adams moved to Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, the White House wasn't finished yet, so he had to move into a tavern, which was, or move into a room that was above a tavern. So there you go. That might have been all right for General Grant.
I was going to say, some people might like that, but I don't know.
All right. 131 years ago in 1888, the poem Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer was first published in the San Francisco Daily Examiner. He earned $5 for his work. Could you imagine that?
No.
What's that poem worth now?
Wow.
82 years ago, 1937, the Duke of Windsor married Wallace Warfield Simpson. He was King of England, and he was forced to give up the throne in order to marry a commoner. What the hell was he thinking? What was going on there?
Love over money. I like it.
I guess so, but when you have money, well, you can find love anywhere, I think.
Well, there it is.
All right. 3 years ago today, 2016, we lost one of the greats. Muhammad Ali passed away at the age of 74. And, you know, I became a boxing fan because of Muhammad Ali. Not so much for the boxing, but because of the personality. I remember watching him with Howard Cosell or on the Wide World of Sports, and he would just talk and talk and talk and never be at a loss for words. And I was like, who the heck is this guy? And I became a fan just almost immediately.
I'm gonna float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. George can't hit what his hands can't see. Now you see me, now you don't. He think he will, but I know he won't. They tell me George is good, but I'm twice as nice. And I'm gonna stick to his butt like white on rice.
That's right.
There you go.
That's one of my favorites.
He's the man. He really is. And we lost him way too soon. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Not only for boxing, but he just did so much for race relations, and he just did so much.
He was a huge part of the movements and everything. He was one of the trailblazers. I think when you think about the, you know, black rights and things like that and the history of it, he's one of the people that will always pop up. He was incredible. I remember when he passed away. That was, my gosh, I don't think they could have come up with more 30 on 30s on ESPN just talking about his legacy and what he did for the boxing world and so on and so forth. He is truly missed for sure.
All right, this is a spoiler alert. So if you don't want to hear this, shut off your radio right now.
No, don't shut it off. Just mute it.
Okay, just mute it. We'll give you a couple of seconds here now to shut it off because this is big.
Three.
This is big.
Two. One.
All right.
Go.
They're saying that there is a video clip appearing to show a Jeopardy phenom, James Holzhauer's historic run, coming to an end. Okay?
What?
The minute-long snippet, believed to be a leaked clip from an episode expected to air tonight, picks up as the contestants reveal their responses in the final Jeopardy segment and ends with the 34-year-old professional gambler in an unfamiliar position. Second place, trailing leader Emma Boucher by $3,200. Now, Holzhauer offered the correct response, okay? But he uncharacteristically bet a low sum. His wager, a modest one for the first time, surprised even Alex Trebek. And it was revealed that Holzhauer had bet a conservative $1,399, bumping his score from $23,400 to $24,799. Boucher, who led with $26,600, sealed the deal and her place in game show history by also icing the big winner. Final Jeopardy wagering, $20,201 to net a total of over $46,000. So according to this, now this is on the New York Post website, James Holzhauer will lose tonight on Jeopardy. So we'll see what happens there. He has been very, very exciting. I have not missed an episode. He has been wonderful. I mean, the thing is, he's a professional gambler, so he doesn't have that thing like you and I have, like, oh, my God, I've won $1 million. I don't want to touch this. I got to watch. He's just free and clear with the money. But he has to know all the answers. He still has to be a very...
You still have to be very intelligent to be on that show.
Yes, you do.
And do well, yeah. that means a lot coming from you, though, Tony, because you're like a diehard Jeopardy fan. So the fact that you have been...
Well, I
have you been staying up late to watch that? Have you been missing bedtime?
No, we've been recording it, to be honest with you. So, I've been watching it at 2:30 in the afternoon, but that's okay. Nonetheless, I've been watching it. But yeah, it seems that he's all finished now.
Oh, no. Yeah. Are you sad? I mean, how do you feel? This is kind of a spoiler for you, honestly, more than anybody else. Are you sad?
Yeah, I am a little sad.
Tone.
I was rooting for him because, you know, he has been really good. And I've said to my wife on every single occasion, I says, he hasn't missed one answer. He answers all of the questions. And his two opponents, they're kind of like frozen. They're like a doe in the headlights. They're like, because he's just so good. He's so slick. He's so quick.
Yeah, he's got all the right tools in his toolbox. Well, that makes sense, that because I wondered why your appetite was so weird at breakfast this morning. You seemed a little off. Why didn't you tell me about this? We could have talked about this.
Yeah,
we really could have talked through this.
Well, you don't want to hear my problems, you know.
I do. I had problems too this morning. Did you hear about the Lion Kings? That they're mad about the new Lion King because Pumbaa looks too much like a real warthog. I was devastated about that. I mean, there's a lot of spoilers out there. We could have talked about this morning.
What is part of your routine during the course of the day that gets you going in the morning? What are some of the things that you need to get going in the morning? Now, these are the big things that people say that they need. A cup of coffee, a good cup of coffee, is the number one thing that most of us need to get our day off to a good start. Okay. Waking up after getting enough sleep. I don't think any of us get enough sleep. The fact that this is number two is a testament about how much we love coffee. Number three, a morning shower. Now, this is something that is crucial, okay? I don't understand people. There are people that take a shower and then go to bed and wake up the next morning and get dressed.
You're looking at one of them.
Really? I can't do it.
I can't shower in the morning. First of all, you'll wake up the whole household. Second of all, you're cold, you're wet, you don't feel... No. I just want to go back to bed after a shower. You take a nice warm shower, Tony. Like, just think about yourself if you were me. Mm-hmm. You take a nice warm shower after you already put the baby to bed, your husband's downstairs watching a game with the dog, and you have alone time right now, and you take a nice shower, and you brush your teeth, and you get into bed, and you just go off to sleep. It's delightful. And then in the morning, all you really have to do is put a brush through your hair and throw on some pants and bada bing, bada boom. Here we are, Tony. Maybe brush your teeth again. That's important as well. But no, I don't get the morning shower thing.
So this is the reason why the studio smells like Parmesan cheese.
That's exactly right.
I see. I totally disagree with that. Totally.
Well, clearly, I never understood the shower, right? Other than to wake up. If people feel like I need to wake up, I need water in my face, fine. But honestly, you're lying to yourself. 9 times out of 10, people take a shower in the morning just to wake themselves up. They don't do a good, really washing their hair and washing their bodies. You're talking about a quick, let me jump in, 2 seconds, let me get my hair wet so I could gel it over. I see your little gel thing in the morning.
Where? I've got no hair. I cut it off.
No,
what are you talking about?
No, it grew back. Don't kid yourself.
Okay. All right.
I know your routine, so I don't get the more...
Now, the morning shower is crucial in the morning. I'm sorry. It's and I do
than just
get the soap and go boo boo boo. I do a full shower. Number one, I don't care if I wake up the whole house. That don't bother me. Tony Reno's paying the bills. He's taking a shower when he wants to.
That must be nice.
Okay, that's number one.
That's number one.
Anybody complains, you get a big shut up and see where you can go.
So you don't wake up Chris in the morning when you shower? That doesn't wake her up? Do you put the lights on too?
I probably do. No, I don't turn on the lights.
Oh, that's nice of you.
I probably do wake her up. But again, I don't care. I'm sorry. That's the way that it goes. I'm sorry. I'm taking a shower in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. I love you. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, continue on with your rant.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, the cold and all of that stuff. I disagree. I got to get rolling in the morning.
Well, maybe you're more like a polar bear. Like you stay warm. I can't stay warm. I'm freezing.
There is a gentleman here.
Yes.
He will be nameless. He takes his shower at night. Then he gets up in the morning, puts on his clothes, and he goes. And he's got all colics in the back of his hair because he slept on a wet head all night.
Do I know this person?
Of course you do. You know him very, very well. But I'm not going to rat him out.
I'm trying to think of who has... Okay. I know who you're talking about. Oh. Wait, but that's... to be fair, my husband and my son suffer terribly from having cowlicks. They're awful. And my husband showers twice a day. He showers every morning and every night. He's kind of a psycho. He likes to be very clean. But he has terrible cowlicks, which I don't know if it's just like after an hour, they just pop up. My son is the same way. He's got it bad, too. He looks like a poor little cockatiel almost every time I look at him.
Well, your son is a special case because his skull isn't fully hardened yet. So
I'm telling you, kid's got a head full of hair.
Well, there you go. I know I'm a relic of another time. I come to the party late on most things.
No.
Yeah, we still have we still have a rotary phone at our house.
I think that's cool.
I was still playing 45s on my Victrola up until about a week ago. But I finally learned the whole concept of iTunes. And now Apple is going to kill the iTunes maybe today after almost 20 years, after two decades of turning the music industry on its head by launching iTunes. They're now getting ready to retire the iconic product. During the software keynote at its annual Worldwide Developers Conference in San Jose, the tech giant is set to replace iTunes with separate standalone music, television, and podcast amps. Now, the move has been rumored for years, and it will align Apple's media strategy across the board. iPhones, iPads, they're already offering separate music, TV, and podcasts in lieu of the centralized iTunes app that lives on in Macs and MacBooks. But now they're taking it away. I finally got the concept on how to get the music that I wanted from iTunes without having to call one of my sons to help me with it, and now you're taking it away. Are you kidding me?
But do you pay for it? You're still paying for all your music?
Most of it was from the CDs that I had purchased over the years. I just kind of put them in there.
Right.
But every now and again, there's a song that I want or a song that I'm missing, and I'll go to iTunes to go and get it. And, you know, I mean, what is it, $1.29, whatever it is, that's fine. But now you can't do it anymore. After today, I think it's gone.
Okay, well, here's the thing, Tony. I know change is hard for you. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for you. Mm-hmm. If you don't know Tony Reno, let me just say, change is hard for him. It's worse than the Yankees, like, losing the World Series. It's awful for you.
Yes.
So don't kill me through the glass window. This is why I don't sit in the same room as you, because of instances like this. I'm going to teach you Spotify. It's so easy. I promise you. Anybody out there who agrees with me, please tell Tony. It's so easy, Tony. If I just put the app on your phone, I promise you, all you do is open it. There is a search box. Type in whatever you want. Doesn't matter. You want to listen to Elton John? Type in Elton John. All of his records, all of his stuff, everything. Don't put the... what are you doing?
That's all very well and good.
Oh, gosh, here we
go. That's all very well and good.
I promise you, it's not hard. My 63-year-old dad crushes Spotify with his eyes closed.
I'm putting the finger up. That means stop talking. I'm putting up the finger.
Well, explain to people which finger you're putting up.
Okay, no,
it's only the pointer one.
Okay, all right. This means Tony Reno has something to say.
Here we go.
I want the music. Again, I'm antiquated. On my iPod. Can I do that with Spotify?
No, Spotify is an app that allows you to stream music for free.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you have an iPod?
Yes.
There we go. All right. We gotta you know what you remind me of is in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I want it now. I just want my iTunes. But does that mean if they stop it, does it mean that you can't get access to the iTunes you already have? Like when you say they're canceling it, it means that like they're gonna delete it off your computers? Like what are you talking about?
That I don't know. I'm talking about actually going into an iTunes library and typing in an artist and looking, you know, taking some tunes.
I think they probably mean, like, if you already have iTunes and you've already got thousands of songs, I don't think they can touch that. Like, they'd have to physically come into your computer and get rid of it. I think going forward, if you wanted more stuff, yes, you'd have a hard time. But that shouldn't affect, I mean, I have to imagine, Tony, you've got a good amount of songs on there. You've got records for days. So shouldn't that already be on your iPod? Or no, do we have to work on that?
There's 7,500 tunes on my iPod.
Okay, so yeah, that won't get touched at all. So the only thing is which you don't really like the new music out, so.
Hate it.
All right,
hate every bit of it.
So you have nothing to worry
Hate it.
You have nothing to worry about then.
Yeah, but
all set.
But you see, every now and again, I'll...
Something will come up and you're like, ooh, that'd be great to add that.
But it has nothing to do with new music. It might be like an old Johnny Cash song from 1958.
Right, sure.
Yeah, but I don't... No music. Tony Reno.
No music.
Nothing new.
I'm Tony Reno.
Absolutely. Tony Reno doesn't like anything new.
That's fine.
All right. 8:42. I don't even want to buy new socks. Tony Reno likes nothing new.
Oh, that's where the smell's coming from. It's not my morning showers. It's your socks that you've been wearing for months and months on end. Now it all makes sense.